You're listening to Work and Life on Business Radio, powered by the Wharton School. Here again is Professor Stu Friedman.
Hey, welcome back to Work and Life on SiriusXM's Business Radio, powered by the Wharton School. I am Stu Friedman. I'm director of Wharton's Work-Life Integration Project. And if you are just joining us, what we do on this show is explore everything related to work and the rest of life. Our aim is to get you to be more informed, more effective in creating a greater sense of harmony among the different parts of your life and of the lives of the people that you touch. I am speaking with the former head of human resources at Bloomberg, Anne Ernie. She's with me in the studio. Prior to joining Bloomberg, she was the managing director and chief diversity officer at Lehman Brothers, where she pioneered global efforts in the recruiting, retention, and advancement of women and underrepresented groups in financial services. She is married with two children and recently left her job at Bloomberg. And that's what we're going to be turning our attention to in this next part of our conversation. So, Anne, you're running HR for Bloomberg, a very dynamic and intense environment. The Mike Bloomberg has left his role as the mayor of New York City and returned to the company. And not too long ago, you'll have to tell us exactly when, you decide, you know, I think I'm ready for something different. So tell us, how did you come to that decision? It must have been a really interesting set of conversations you had about that. What can you say about how you came to that decision? And then let's talk about what you've been doing since.
Sure. Well, I have to say, it was truly one of the hardest decisions I've ever made in my life. My career was never more exciting. I had a great opportunity to work with senior leadership and Mike himself. He was just an incredible visionary and leader to come back to the company. But it was also sort of at a crossroads in my life where I just, you know, recently celebrated a big birthday. And more importantly, I have spent the majority of my HR career in the last 15 years really creating policies and practices to help individuals sort of navigate that work-life balance. So, for example, you know, at Bloomberg, worked to create the first flexible leave programs. We were working on creating different types of actual long-term leave programs, whether it was maternity leave, paternity leave, and really trying to make it accessible to all employees. So we renamed them as leaves of absence, so that whether you were and did not have differentiated leave. So if you were a gay parent, you know, adopting a child, you know, you were going to get, you know, one period of time. And if you were a, you know, female giving birth to a baby, you get another. What I really wanted to make sure was that all employees in the pursuit of taking care of children had equal options and equal time. So I spent a lot of time creating options for others. And I got to a point in my life.
Let me just pause here and just ask you, is that what you were able to create? So the policy, just to get clear on what the policy was that you ultimately were able to establish, describe it to us. How did it work?
Sure. Well, the idea was we had actually quite a confusing matrix of leave policies. Mm-hmm. And I would have to say Bloomberg has always been on the cutting edge of most HR policies and incredibly generous. But there was disparate and I think outdated, antiquated approaches. And so the very last thing I got approved before I left was a updated modern approach to leaves, which really essentially made leave, you know, pretty much on the cutting edge in terms of length of time away and support that we provide, approved right before I left.
What is the deal? How much time and for anyone?
So, well, in terms of, you know, women, I don't want to go into the details of the times, but let's suffice it to say that for, you know, paternity leave, where we did it primary caregiver and secondary caregiver.
Okay.
So that makes it gender neutral.
Uh-huh.
And it also makes it, you know, neutral across whether you're a hetero or a homosexual couple. So
the couple decides who's the primary and who's the secondary.
Correct. Mm-hmm. And if you were a primary caregiver, you would get, you know, a certain amount of weeks. And if you were a secondary caregiver, also a fixed amount. But
got it.
Suffice it to say that it benchmarked incredibly well against many of our competitors who we were competing for talent.
Mm-hmm.
And so this passion around creating options for people,
yes,
all of a sudden, you know, I decided I've worked so hard on it. Now I perhaps.
What about me?
Well, I'll get one for you over here. We'll have to talk to the Penn administration.
No, I meant you were saying that about yourself. You were starting to wonder about creating your own flexibility. Yes.
No,
I have the greatest flexibility in the universe. My job cannot be beat, but that's another story.
But absolutely, I thought, what about me? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was going through a point in my life where certain things were going on that I would never get back. So, for example, mm-hmm. I brought up two children. My daughter is 24 and lives in London. She's already, you know, flew the coop, so to speak. And I have a son who was a rising senior. And I always said to my family.
Rising senior in high school.
In high school. I always said to my husband and even to my mom, who's one of my great confidants, that, you know, when Noah's in his junior year, I want to know what it's like to be a stay-at-home mom. You know, I pushed through 28 years of my career in a very, you know, fast-paced, you know, high-powered,
yes.
high-pressured environment, working, you know, 12, 14, 16 hours a day because I wanted to succeed. I wanted to get to that next level. I wanted to do the best job possible.
Mm-hmm.
But, and as I said earlier about Lehman, it often was, you know, since I was being paid to do that job, that often trumped family decisions. But I knew that if I waited until my son went to college and all of a sudden I had the time and the money to take time off, what was it worth? And so I knew that it was a very important time in any high school kid's life when they start to look at colleges,
mm-hmm.
When they start to, you know, work on applications. And I didn't have any of that time. Often when I went on a college tour, something would happen at work and I'd spend time sitting in the car while my husband walked around campus with my son. Or on a weekend, we were going to work on his list that he had to give to his guidance counselor.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in the office and didn't have time. Simultaneously, I also have elderly parents. You know, I'm part of that sandwich generation.
Yes.
And my dad has Alzheimer's and is 81. And really,
sorry to hear that.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's something I think so many of your listeners are facing.
Mm-hmm.
And
I can relate personally.
And it's something that you feel, you know, again, a different kind of obligation,
mm-hmm.
not only to support the parent with the Alzheimer's, it was really more to support my mother who was
of
taking
course,
care of my dad.
Such an incredible burden.
And, you know,
it's a lot of strain.
And they're not always in the position to, they need support. They need support to make difficult decisions that they may not be seeing objectively.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say the third leg of this was, you know, my husband and I both had equally intense careers, and he's been an incredible supporter of me mm-hmm. throughout it all. And often when he would pick me up from work and I'd get in the car, I was the one who spilled the beans first and just ended up taking the whole ride home of talking about, you know, decisions mm-hmm. I had to make or mm-hmm. problems or politics I was dealing with at work.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we hadn't really spent a lot of time focusing on his career.
Mm-hmm.
And so for my marriage, it was, I think, a very important thing for me to spend more time focusing on helping, you know, focusing on him. He
mm-hmm.
didn't need any help in his career he didn't need my help.
But for there to be some sense of focus on whatever it was that he was
absolutely.
Doing with his work.
So I really came to this point where I had to make the decision of I can continue to keep my head down and plow through it like I've done every other stage of my career.
Mm-hmm.
Or I was going to exercise the option that I put in place for everybody else. And I have to tell you, Stu, I shocked everybody. No one knew that I was going through this sense of personal pain, and no one really knew sort of the toll that it was taking on me personally in terms of lack of sleep and the inability to do what I really wanted to do. And I spent 2 weeks on vacation, my first two-week vacation in, I don't know, 15, 20 years. And during that 2 weeks,
wow.
I felt a sense of freedom.
When was this now?
This was in December and January of 2014 going into 15.
Okay.
I was down in Uruguay, South America, far away, no cell phone reception. And it was during that time that I decided I need more of this time.
Mm-hmm.
But I needed to sit on that thought. I needed to talk. I needed to really think it through. And I waited several months before ultimately approaching my boss to really say that I needed to take some time off.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a great discussion about possibly, you know, should we split my, you know, should we change my job? Would I be interested in doing something else? But I really felt that I needed a genuine break and a genuine time to be able to focus on family, to experience for myself what it meant to be a stay-at-home mom,
mm-hmm.
you know, after being a professional mom for my whole life, and just to experience that sheer sense of freedom. And that's what so my last day, I resigned in early March. My last day was May 1st. I stayed on to help do a very orderly transition and have stayed in close touch with most members of my team, almost all members of my team. But I really took the summer off and did the things that I set out to do. So
was this understood to be like a sabbatical where you would return, might return, might not return? What's the mutual understanding, or if you can talk about
this? Sure, I can, and I think it really shocked a lot. So one of the policies we were able to, Bloomberg had a no rehire policy, and it's quite public, and Mike writes about it in his book, Bloomberg by Bloomberg. And over the years, many people who were incredible performers had to leave for personal or professional reasons, but ultimately realized that they might want to come back. And so we have hired back, several key new people. But that really wasn't something that we had done it quite often. But when the announcement went out that I was going to be leaving Bloomberg to pursue real family pursuits, first of all, there were lots of snickers. Everyone's like, oh, sure, you're going to take care of your family or for personal reasons.
You're doing air quotes here, meaning that people didn't really believe that was the true reason, that it was something deeper or different.
Or of being fired that there was something more sinister.
It's the usual euphemism, right?
It is I knew it was a euphemism often used, but it was the actual truth for me. But I was so honored and pleased when it was written that, we hope Anne will return at some point. Mm-hmm. So while I didn't go on a formal sabbatical because we don't have sabbaticals at Bloomberg, there was absolutely an agreement and an opportunity that should I want to return, that I would I'd go back and talk about what potential opportunities exist.
I see.
Which I haven't yet done.
So you're right now in this interim period.
Correct.
I am speaking with Anne Ernie, who is the former head of human resources at Bloomberg and also the former chief diversity officer at Lehman. And we're talking about a big decision she made recently to take time away from that really exciting role at Bloomberg, working as a senior leader in the company to create cultural change in one of the more important companies in New York, if not America. And what that has meant. So you wrestled with this decision. Ultimately, you decided that family trumps business.
For now.
Do I have that right?
You do for now.
For now.
Absolutely, for this important kind of little period of time that I won't get back.
All right. So Noah, your younger child, is now he's now a senior?
That's correct.
Okay. So you've got this year.
We did the visits over the summer. We've worked on our list. He's worked on his essay.
His list.
His
not
list.
Your list.
Not well. Like, I have my preferences, but we've made sure that it's his list. Of course.
We had a wonderful guest on the show a couple of weeks ago who talked about the very important use of the appropriate pronoun. It's his list, his school, not ours. But anyway, please continue.
Exactly. And I think he's in a terrific place where he genuinely knows the direction that he wants to go in.
Yes, yes.
I've spent a great deal of time with my mom, working on getting care at home. And we're looking at also, what does long-term care look like when she's unable? Mm-hmm. Looking at homes. So I'm going down to D.C. next week to do that with her. But I've also, I actually was most surprised about the space that I've made for myself and sort of my own, my own personal nurturing. I love to entertain. I love to cook. So I spent a great deal of time working on that this summer. And I've also done a great deal of research because the question is, do I want to go back to doing what I did, or is this an opportunity to pivot and change direction? And I did a great deal of research on, quote unquote, great women or high powered women who have made mid-career changes. And I've been really studying that quite hard, Stu.
So what have you taken away from your study?
So they're great.
What's the big idea?
I haven't gotten to the big idea yet. But I have been able to through fate. Actually, there was, there's lots of people that have worked in the White House or worked in the State Department or worked in investment banking or worked in media careers that came up with an idea and went for, you know, took some time off and then went for it and then went in completely different directions. I mean, you know, someone like a Martha Stewart, you know, she, I don't know if you know, she worked in the State Department, or Ina Garten.
Did not know.
The Ina Garten, who's the Barefoot Contessa, worked in the White House and now obviously has an incredible, you know, food network, brand and global following. They're a great, you know, even entertainers who've gone off and built multi-billion-dollar businesses. Jessica Alba, I mean, she's, you know, a billionaire. So there's some really great examples that have been inspiring to me. And I have a notebook, which I have in front of me right here, which has a lot of the ideas that I'm thinking about. But I also, I'm trying to think about whether I want the portfolio career going forward. Do I want to have my own entrepreneurial venture, or do I want to go back to the corporate world? And that's sort of the crossroads that I'm finding myself in now, and I'm looking to January 2016 to make that decision.
Oh, that's just a few months away.
It's just a few months.
All right, so you're going to have to come back and tell us what you ultimately decided and why. So what's, as you think about the next phase of your journey of discovery, which you referred to it as on the break just now, what's going to be paramount in your thinking? As, because there's some competing interests here, right? You can't do everything. How do you come to understand what's really most important to you now and where you want to invest, you know, your precious moments and energies in your life going forward?
Well, one of the things that I've always, you know, made sort of a core principle of what I decide to do is, can I make an impact? You know, and am I empowered to make an impact? So when Joe Gregory tapped me on the shoulder and said, men run in packs, women don't, he put money behind it. He put
Gregory was the president at Lehman Brothers.
President Lehman Brothers
got you on this track,
and
15
he put
years ago.
You know, compensation. We, you know, had a pool of compensation that I could award people for engaging. He put his money where his mouth is. When I was at Bloomberg, you know, working with senior leadership, they completely put the right resources behind it. So whatever I do going forward has to have the right resourcing for me to have the kind of impact that I want. So that's sort of like a core principle.
Good to know. And an important lesson for anybody listening and thinking about, you know, their next phase of their career. You need to have the support to have the impact that you want to have. And sometimes we just kind of overlook that or take it for granted or think it's going to work out. But you've come to understand how critically important that is.
Absolutely. And, you know, impact can be measured in dollars or political capital. But I think one of the other aspects that I'm exploring is this whole notion of affiliative cap, you know, affiliative power. So to the extent that you're working for someone as amazing and world-renowned as a Mike Bloomberg, I mean, that's incredible affiliative capital to be able to execute and get things done. So the question is, whatever I do next, do I need affiliative capital or does my own capital carry itself? And I've been thinking, you know, based on the ideas, what is needed to make it happen? Because I've always been part of a corporate system and I've always had that benefit. So I'm trying to decide, you know, I'm trying to figure out what that looks like going forward. And I would say the third stool of this, you know, sort of the criteria that I'm setting is I do want to have more freedom. And, you know, so whether it's a portfolio approach of perhaps consulting or whether it's going back into a corporate, it's going to need to have more flexibility than I've been able to have in previous roles.
Which is what we know everybody wants, right? Greater freedom and support to pursue the things that matter in ways that enable them to have the kind of impact that that they want to have. That's everything what this show is about. What all of my work has been about is to create opportunities for people to be supported to pursue the lives that they really want to live. And, of course, that happens at the level of social policy, corporate practice, and then empowering and skilling up individuals to claim that power. So as you think now about your kids and their future and of the millennials generally, what did you learn in your experiences most recently at Bloomberg? This is a topic we talk about a lot on the show that a lot of people are interested in. What have you learned about how the rising generation sees the you know the whole issue of work and life? And you know what's the most pressing concern for businesses with respect to addressing those needs and interests?
Absolutely. I mean, I think whether you're a millennial or you're a baby boomer, I mean, what has changed all of our lives is obviously technology. Mm-hmm. And the ability to work 24/7, whether it's, you know, used to be on our BlackBerries and now it's on any device, whether it's your laptop, your iPad, your iPhone, you're reachable 24/7 pretty much anywhere in the world except, you know, where you can't get reception. And I think that that has blurred work in life. And I think the millennials are doing a much, you know, they do a much better job of navigating that and being able to leverage that to mm-hmm. kind of get their work done. But on the other hand, I think they're much more intent and focused on making sure that they have a distinction between their work and life and that whatever they're working on has meaning. And one of the things I was incredibly proud of at working at Bloomberg was the fact that we were able to work so closely with the Bloomberg Foundation, which is one of, you know, the most high impact foundations in the world, and engage particularly our millennials in a lot of the volunteerism work. And I think bringing that meaning to the office and allowing employees to go off and, whether it was, you know, clean beaches or go in and teach in schools or work on just a myriad of projects, that was incredibly meaningful mm-hmm. to the next generation. And again, it's blurring the lines because they could come to work and then go work on a beach. Or, you know, when they go on the beach, they may be working mm-hmm. on a proposal that they're working on. But they're able to blend it, but we have to make sure that we're very much more intentional in providing them meaning as it relates to work.
Absolutely. You know, we did this study comparing the class of 1992 with the class of 2012 at Wharton. And one of the major findings of that study was how much more the current generation values having meaningful impact through their work, especially women, but men too. But the growth in that value, as expressed by women, is really powerful. And it makes perfect sense that a company like Bloomberg would invest heavily in creating opportunities for people to have a greater sense of meaning through their work, but not just through projects like this, through the everyday. So were there ways that you did this at Bloomberg, or that you see for other companies, you know, other business leaders listening in? What advice would you have for them in terms of how to create a greater sense of meaning and purpose for millennials at work to fully engage them?
You know, it goes back to our opening conversation about corporate culture. And I think that it's really important for any company to really define what is the there. What are we ultimately accomplishing? And I think at a place like Bloomberg, which provides incredible transparency mm-hmm. to global markets, which ultimately feeds economies and impacts everyone, it was something that everyone believed in and understood. So
made that clear.
Absolutely. People understood what the Bloomberg did, and, you know, whether it was Bloomberg media bringing information and breaking news 70% of the time, mm-hmm. or whether it was these, you know, these boxes that allowed you to get data and analytic overlays that helped you make better decisions. People believed in that mission. But the other thing that I thought was just incredible about working at Bloomberg was the fact that, you know, a large percentage of every dollar was going to philanthropy. It's mm-hmm. a privately held company.
Right.
And people knew that the profits that we were making were for a higher purpose. And that was not misunderstood.
Like a very large percentage.
Like, you know, a majority of the profits were mm-hmm. going to fund the foundation, and mm-hmm. the foundation was going to redistribute that to really important projects, which, by the way, we were going to, you know, were highly measurable. Mm-hmm. So, yes.
Well, so that's a part of the Bloomberg world that not many people know all that much about. So I'm glad that you pointed that out. It's a fitting note for us to come to closure on. We've unfortunately run out of time, but before we do sign off, and let me ask you, as you advise younger people just coming out of school and their parents as they think about their careers, based on what you've seen in the financial services world and tech and media world, what do you think is the most important thing for young people to know as they're launching their careers?
I think the most important thing to know is that, you know, every magic carpet ride is going to experience some turbulence, and that you really need to do, you know, obviously this is trite, you need to do what you love, you need to do what you believe in, work for a company that's going to help you understand the ultimate purpose of what you do every day is, and understand that a career is long term, and that there are going to be good days and bad days, But ultimately, being focused on the higher purpose is such an important thing for all of us to do. Otherwise, it becomes, you know, a drudgery day in and day out. Now, and I just want to say one last thing, Stu. When I graduated from SAIS with my master's in international affairs, I wanted to go into the government because I wanted to do good by the world. Mm-hmm. But I was told the best piece of advice I ever received was go to the private sector, understand how it works, you know, accumulate your own power, your own wealth, and with that, then you can impact, you know, real change, and then go back to the public sector. Mm-hmm. So I think really always understanding, you know, ultimately what you want to do, you need to have influence and your own power to be able to make that happen.
I have been speaking with Anne Ernie, who's the former head of HR at Bloomberg and the former chief diversity officer at Lehman. Anne, thank you so much for joining me today.
You're so welcome. Thank you for having me.
So, as I like to do at the end of every show, a quick takeaway from our guests. And the big idea for me is, in listening to Anne's really remarkable story, is how important it is, as she was just saying here at the end, to focus on what matters to you. And that's going to change over the course of your life. So your values and your priorities, they're going to shift. But one of the things that's most remarkable about Anne's career, and I think one of the reasons for her great success and impact, is that she's been thoughtful, reflective, and really unafraid to ask some questions that might be difficult and painful to address about, well, what really matters to me now? And what do I have to change in order to align what I care about with what I do? That is a great model for all of us. So thank you again for listening to our show tonight. I want to thank our program director and producer, Patty Hall, our crack engineer, Dan Baker. And I hope you'll tune in next week when I'll be speaking with Boston pediatrician Jenny Radesky about boundaries and handheld devices. And we'll also be speaking with David Rodriguez, head of HR at Marriott. Until next time, I am Stu Friedman, and you've been listening to Work and Life on Business Radio, powered by the Wharton School on Sirius XM 111.